Turn me up in my headphones.
Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. I am your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, riding with me is my man, Patrick Irvin. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PACS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org, and you can learn more about PACS, and you can dig into the codes of conducts that have been created to help black America become a better black America. And also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net, and follow us on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Freedom Train Network Facebook page, and you can also subscribe to the Freedom Train via Google Play Music or iTunes. You can get the episodes downloaded right into your phones. All you got to do is pull your notification down, click on it, and there you go. Patrick.
What up?
What's going on, my friend?
You forgot your name in the beginning of the show.
I'm excited. I'm sorry. So I'm back, though. I remember who I am, though. I know me. Okay? I know me.
I felt it was my duty to our listening audience to point out the fact that you forgot your name at the beginning of the show.
Okay, see? I read books, okay? I know me, okay? My mother told me yesterday who I was, okay?
Oh, well, she forgot a day like today.
True. Yeah,
what we got,
Joe?
Who we got?
We got a good show. We got a good show. We have Miss Kristen Wright, and she's on the show today. So I'm gonna dig into her bio a bit, give people a little background information about her, and then, you know, we're gonna bring her on and we're gonna learn all about the wonderful things that she is doing in the communities.
So what does she write about?
Everything.
Okay.
See, you can't get me. I'm always on my toes.
Gotcha.
All right. So Ms. Kristen C. Wright is the owner of Many Endeavors, an educational and small business consulting company. She is from the Bronx, New York, but has lived and traveled nationally and internationally, working on community and business projects in Brazil, Cuba, Germany, England, and Japan. The Florida A&M University MBA grad seeks to educate, inspire, and empower learners of all ages through literacy, entrepreneurship, economic empowerment, and creative movement. She is an educator, entrepreneur, and journalist who has always been active in various genres of the arts such as dance, music, writing, and drama. She coaches teachers, empowers parents, and educates students of all ages in entrepreneurship, financial literacy, cultural enrichment, early childhood development, literacy through the arts, math skills, HSE, which is formerly known as the GED programs, life and career skills, professional development, dance, and healthy living choice programs. And she also believes in sprinkling a little sunshine wherever she goes. And without further ado, Ms. Kristen C. Wright, give her a hand, our studio audience.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome.
That sunshine? I just sprinkled a little sunshine on y'all.
We feel it, too. We feel it.
All right.
welcome to the Freedom Train. Yes,
glad to be here.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And so, Patrick, you got the first question. Let's do this. Let's jump into this interview and learn more about Kristen.
All right. So, Ms. Kristen C., write about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you?
I'm Kristen Wright.
What?
And I'll just, you know, let me help you out a little with your jokes. I used to work at the FAMU, and I was a copy editor, and my code name, Marlon A. Walker from the AJC, they always called me Kristen. You know I'm right. So you're on the right track.
Okay.
That's what's up.
Okay, brush it off a little bit. I'm fine.
Mm-hmm, it's all right.
So you get that when you go to FAMU. You pick that up.
Okay. Whatever. So, but what? Because you seem like you do a lot, and you've obviously been to a lot of places. What inspires you to want to help other people better themselves?
Being alive. I've always been somebody who has you could call it the healing factor. That's what people tell me when I travel. So everything I do often comes right back around to that. I have the things that I love to do. I've always loved to dance. I've always loved to do different things in the arts. I was always really artsy, and I like to educate people and talk to people and communicate and network. So it was only, you know, a matter of time before those things all kind of married each other. But as far as just being inspired, I'm inspired by people. I'm inspired by my students. I'm inspired by things that I see, words that people say, my family. I don't think it was until I got older that I really, really started to appreciate how hard they worked for me to be able to be the creative spirit that I am. So, you know, there's so many different things that make me tick. But that's why I'm happy to be a part of a little bit of everything because I'm inspired daily.
Oh, that's good. That's good, because it's good to hear people say that, because we have a lot of people who look for the negative in life, and you are inspired. You look for the positive in life. You look for the positive in people. Right. That helps. That helps you pull out the best in you. So that's great to hear information like that, and we try our best to make sure we put information out like that. So, you know, our listeners, look for the positive in yourselves and the environments and the people around you. You know, you can't force nobody to do anything, but you want to be able to look for the positive.
Yes, and it's always the monster you feed. I always say that. I see it. You know, I see the things around me that are not so positive. And every now and then, I'm going to give you a little bit of Bronx and let you know how I feel about it. Mm. But as far as that just being the state of being on a regular basis, the monster you feed is the monster that's going to grow. So you want to inspire, surround yourself with inspiration, and know that it comes from everything, not just that person you picked over there. But if you can start to look at everybody as something, you know, to give you a piece of something that you can seek to, I don't know, you can seek to do, to achieve. Mm-hmm. It's not always the person who you see on TV or the person who, you know, has all the money. You know, somebody on the street can inspire you.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's what I was, because I was telling somebody the other day, right? We was talking about gremlins, and I said the monster that he fed turned into the gremlins because he gave it water after 12. He wasn't supposed to give it water after 12, but he gave it water after 12, and then all the...
There you go. He was inspired, right?
Go ahead, Joe. Half of the people don't even know what gremlins is.
Yeah. Because you know what? It's about what you consume.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
I mean?
It is.
The more you consume of something, the more you're going to be filled with it. So what do you choose to be consumed with?
Mm-hmm. You that are what you eat. Mm-hmm.
That is so true.
That's true.
See, I'm there. I'm there. Don't play me like I'm slow. I'm there.
All right, so you have a love for the arts, you know, music, dance, writing, etc. You dabble in all of those. So how did you develop a love for the arts, and how do you think that the arts have helped you become the person who you are today?
So my mama, and my mama. she can't dance.
Oh, man.
And she always wanted me to do things that she didn't do, couldn't do, you know, felt a little insecure about doing, and she always saw that I had a very rough spirit. That's the way they called it when I was younger. I think now they appreciate it a little bit more, but I was definitely challenging. I was very colorful in my thoughts and my expressions, and so she put me in dance very early on because she said I just always loved to move to music. When I was, you know, very young, I loved Tina Turner. I used to sing, "What's love? Got to do, got to do, got to do." That was my thing. But as I got older, having the colorful spirit that I had, I learned how to turn down a little bit. because of the art. So, you know, I was always pretty intelligent and, you know, did well in school, but my behavior was an issue. So, you know, I wasn't one of those kids who the parent was always like, oh, you better get those grades. It was like, please don't get in trouble. Please don't let me get a phone call. Please don't fight. So as I got older, dancing, being in plays and stuff like that, I knew if I acted up, it would stop me from doing that other thing that I wanted to do.
Okay.
And it's funny because I recently had a conversation with somebody about this because they're trying to cut so much of this arts funding as if it's something that doesn't matter. When
right.
the truth is, there are kids who come to school because they want to dance. They come to school because they want to play ball. You know, should that be the inspiration for why they come? No. But is it often what keeps them in check or keeps them in line or keeps, you know, them trying to pull their grades up? Yes. So for me, you know, it wasn't a grade thing. It was a behavior thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once I got into high school, I started having so many opportunities to lead because of these things that I was good at. And it became like a real thought through decision. Like, do I really want to start that beef today with so-and-so who I think said something about me, or do I want to lead my step team?
mm-hmm.
And, you know, over time, your mind starts to mature. You get more experience. You just learn that those things, at the end of the day, being petty, it might be funny, but it don't benefit nobody. And it's not really taking you in any particular direction. It's keeping you exactly where you are. So
mm-hmm.
I know the arts is the reason that I matured, got myself together, learned how to step into leadership roles, and grow up.
Nah, that's great.
Something was being held over my head.
Yeah.
And it worked.
You know, I'm with you because I'm one of those children who the only reason I did the work I did do in high school was because I wanted to play football, you know. So I understand that my motivation wasn't necessarily school, which it should have been, but I was bored with school. I didn't like school. I liked football, and you had to go to school to play football. So that was the reason why I maintained the GPA that I did. But you're right. If you're cutting these programs, you're going to have a lot more children out on the streets because they have no motivation to actually go into the schools and,
right.
and stay in the schools. So I agree.
Mm.
And I guess, to tie it into what happens today, all these things that I was learning when I was younger now play a huge role in what I'm able to do now. And I never thought then that it would matter so much now. What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I wanted to say my motivation for doing good in school. I had two of them.
What was the name?
Well, her name was Ruby Jean, and she was my mama.
Oh,
all
right
now. And so, you know, and the other one was just to finish. I hated school with a passion, and the quickest way to get done with school for me was to do all the work and be done with it. So that's what I did. But mainly it was that whoopings hurt, and
yeah.
I don't have a fetish for pain. So, you know, that's how it is. But you know what? Never mind. So.
You know, it's funny. Whoopings didn't work too much on me. That's why I needed the art. Because I was just like, well, all
right,
that's over.
Right.
And that wasn't
what?
Inspiring to me.
For me, it wasn't that the whoopings necessarily worked. It's that the embarrassment of having been whooped, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, it's psychological.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like, you know, you get to, especially for boys, you get to a certain point, whoopings just, they don't hurt no more.
Right.
You know,
right.
Your mom is huffing and puffing, she's feeling like she's doing something, she's sweating, and, you know, it's just like, yeah, I don't feel this. But it was the psychological component of, I just got whooped. Man, I hope ain't nobody see that.
Hey.
So, you came, so you're from the Bronx, New York.
BX all day.
Yeah.
Every
yeah,
time
son.
I think of New York, I think of DMX. I don't know why.
He from Yonkers.
From Yonkers, but, you know, Yonkers is all right. I definitely dabble back and forth between the Bronx and Westchester. So Mount Vernon.
But I ain't never met no New Yorker that talked like DMX.
Hey,
I don't
special.
Think you met a person that talked like DMX.
That's a great
Somebody
point.
Somebody posted earlier today, yeah. what happened to 90s love? I said DMX. I don't know.
Yeah, touche.
That right there, that element.
Yeah, you know.
So, you came all the way from the BX to little old Tallahassee, Florida to go
sure
to Florida A&M.
Yep.
I did. So, first, my family is from Florida. My mother's family, they are from Eustis, Florida,
okay.
Tiny little place that even people in Florida hadn't heard of.
I know about it.
My grandparents relocated to New York because they were just tired of it, you know, tired of the racism. I just found out recently when my daughter was doing an interview with my granddad that some cops beat him up real bad and tried to make him admit to doing something he didn't do. And when he got out of there, he said he was never coming back. And even now, when he visits Florida, he needs 24 hours, and he's on his way. He needs to come back to New York. So, you know, I had the whole migration situation with my family. But I always visited Florida. I was definitely that kid who said, I'm going away. And, you know, some kids say they're going away, and then when it's time to get ready to go, they're like, well, no, I want to stay home. That was not me. I was independent. I think I came out of the womb like, I'm my own person. I'm ready to explore. So, you know, I said I was going to FAMU. Even now I coach a lot of high school students on choosing colleges, and I'm like, don't do what I did because I applied to one school because that's where I wanted to go, and I decided that's the only place I'm going. And luckily I had the grades to get in. But, yeah, I applied to FAM. My grandma went to FAM. She was class of 1948. And so that was the first thing I knew of FAMU. My grandma went to FAMU. Had never visited, just always said, wow, I'm really interested in where my grandma went. And I knew I wanted to write. So when I decided I was going to do, you know, journalism as my major, I finally started doing my research on the journalism program and found out it was an amazing program. So that just happened to work out for me that way. You know, if I had been majoring in something else, I don't know. But I applied sometime in December, got in early on in the next year, because I remember I knew where I was going before any of my friends knew where they were going. And we took my aunt's van from Chicago. Family drove me on down, and that was that. I said bye. And then that was the start of something amazing. I love FAMU. Like, love. I'm actually, I just came back from the spa. I got on my FAMU 87 shirt and my FAMU sweats, and I was teaching a Zumba class yesterday with all my FAMU stuff on. I had the most amazing time at FAM. I think I always encourage my students to leave the state if they can afford to, just because I think regionally people who live in the United States are very unfamiliar with what happens in other regions and how people live differently. As diverse as we are in New York, we're very internationally diverse, but not necessarily regionally diverse when it comes to understanding other people in the U.S. And, you know, New Yorkers have a rep for going places and kind of feeling like, you know, Southerners are a little slower than we are. But let me tell you, the first couple of months at FAM, I want to say out of the 10 of my friends who rolled together in the middle of Tucker Hall to play spades games until the wee hours of the morning, probably about eight out of ten were on scholarship. And they were from Alabama. They were from Philly. They were from Virginia. They were from Atlanta. They were from Florida. And these were the smartest people I have met. So I love to tell people that because, for one, don't ever think because of where somebody is from that they don't have a certain level of intelligence.
Right.
Two, it let me know, you know, I might have been real having a lot of fun in high school, but I definitely could have applied myself and gotten a scholarship like the rest of these folks.
Exactly.
I was like, dang. And so now when I talk to a lot of my students when they first get to high school, I'm like, listen, don't sleep. You know, don't be the one there like me. You know, I got scholarships along the way. I did get a journalism scholarship from one program, and then I was a Dow Jones copy editing scholar sometime into my think my junior year or my sophomore year, coming out of sophomore year. So I got my scholarships along the way, but the people who were there on a full ride with not a care in the world about, you know, where they were staying and how they were going to come up with money or their parents having to pay, I wish I had done it that way. So with my daughter now, I claimed that the day she was born, I was like, Mommy's not paying for college. No, she's not. No, she's not. And we're firm on that now. I don't play when it comes to education. So,
you know, and you see, I used to tell, because your story is similar to mine, except minus the grandma part and the Florida A&M part and the school part and the so, but other than that, it's very similar because it is. So, but I used to tell people, you know, just because Southerners move slow, don't mean that we think slow. Don't, you know, like, don't get it twisted. So, you know, but it's cool. I appreciate you saying that, because when I was in the military, I had friends from New York, and they used to always, you know, when I first met each and every one of them, they assumed that I was dumber than them because I was from the South. And, you know, we had to quickly dispel those myths. We had to, we had to do that very quickly.
I know better.
I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
So, I got a part two. Sorry, Joe. I got a part two.
Go for it.
So, what was the best part about going to a HBCU for you?
Ah, that's a great question. The best part for me was being around such a diverse group of Black people.
Okay.
Whenever somebody says they're going to an HBCU, people who are not familiar with HBCUs and their prestige and their history have no idea how heavily we are recruited out of college.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of one of those things where when people start talking, I just get quiet because I'm like, right, I'll take those internships. You ain't got to come here. But, you know, a few people said something to me, is your mother okay with you going there? I'm like, yeah, she went to Tuskegee, and my auntie went to Howard, and my grandma went to FAM, and my grandfather went to Bethune-Cookman. So we ride for HBCUs. But looking at, you know, I have friends who had never been around Black people before. I had white friends at FAM. I had a group of friends from the Virgin Islands. I had, it was kind of like the L.A. and the Philly people kind of all hung out with the New York people. It was weird. We all had the different accents and kind of just got each other because we were so far away from everybody else. I met the rockers, the goths. I met the folks who just barely made it out the hood. I met the Jack and Jill folks. You know, one young
Hold
lady.
On. Who is Jack and Jill? What, they fetched a pail of water? They was hunting?
Yes,
what's
they
that?
Did. They did. Water. It was the desert. It was the desert. But, you know, the folks who are in the... You know, in those, you know, high society Black organizations, they were at FAM. I mean, and my bestie, Nicole, and her roommate, Vinaya, they were both some of the smartest women. I want to say Vinaya was a NASA scholar and Nicole did En-ROADS. So it was just meeting all these brilliant people who were so different. You know, they love to lump us in together. And granted, we might all deal with the same things, you know, when we see lights, cop lights, but it doesn't mean that our lives are monolithic and that we have one experience and we all can, you know, agree on everything, or, you know, we all like rap music, or we all, you know, like everybody was so different. Matter of fact, I went to FAM with Kimberly Pate, a.k.a. K.
Yeah.
Michelle.
Yeah, and yeah, okay, okay.
You on a yodeling scholarship.
What?
And it's funny because I knew that because she used to yodel all the time. She's so silly and so talented. But she was actually, there's a show called Hollywood Hip Hop Squares now on VH1.
Uh-huh.
And that was one of the questions the other day, and I laughed because somebody said yodeling. The person was like, nah, that's not true. I'm like, she absolutely did. So the diversity of an HBCU. While I was at FAM, I danced with orchestras, and we were different. We were like a theater dance company. They had Mahogany, and those were the girls who used to pump it up. You know, Boys of Poison, mm-hmm. and what's that other one? Those boys, everybody knows. Boy, you know,
the Strikers.
The Strikers.
Yeah.
I got to travel a lot dancing with orchestras. I modeled with Faces for a little bit. I work for Journey magazine. Like we the year that I did Journey, we actually started getting ads from outsiders to Journey to fund the magazine. I went to Japan while I was at FAM. I did Camp Adventure. Went out there and I taught for 4 months on a military base in Yokosuka, Japan. So the opportunities that I got coming out of there were ridiculous. You know, I did that. I worked at the Macon Telegraph. I was a Dow Jones Scholar because of my training from Professor Rishi in the journalism department, because he made sure we were on point. So just opportunity on top of opportunity on top of opportunity. I don't see anywhere else I could have gotten all that. And I do believe it's the person, you know. Some people could go anywhere and make nothing of it. Some people could go anywhere and make everything of it. But FAMU was my place. That's exactly where I was supposed to be.
Yes, you definitely made more of your family experience than I did. So, shouts out to you. Shouts out. Well, I learned my lesson, though. You know, wherever you are.
I came from the Bronx. I wasn't down there to play no games.
You know, wherever you are, you got to go for the goal. So I definitely definitely did learn that. But, you know, I was in a discussion earlier about, you know, the HBCUs, because I'm always fighting for HBCUs and sticking up for all the good, because I've seen the greatness that people have, that has been cultivated in people while they're at HBCUs, and the love that you get in the family environment that you're going to have, and the nurturing that you can get, not just from the professors, but from your colleagues that's around you. So I'm always pushing that about the HBCUs. And like people who go to Florida State, I always ask them, all right, so name me five people who are not athletes who do significant things. Go. So I just like to mess with them like that. So
well,
one time for HBCU.
Our journalism classes.
Right.
They
right.
would always come over to take our classes. So again, you know, one of those things where people were looking their nose down at the HBCU, having no idea that they come over here to get the quality classes.
Right.
But you know, that is history. So.
Okay. Right. So you are the founder of Many Endeavors, which is your educational and consulting company. So when did you choose to become a business owner, and why did you start this particular type of company?
Okay, so there's a backstory. First off, my company is Black Galaxy Media LLC, but my DBA is Many Endeavors, because that's you know, what I operate under. My grandma's name was Minnie. When I founded my company, I knew I was going to take two different directions with it, and I wasn't sure which one I wanted to do first. So one was Many Endeavors, the other was Neo Black Cinema, and I spent, you know, 3 or 4 good years traveling to film festivals with writers in the film industry, covering films from people of color. That was an amazing experience, and, you know, when I look back at it now, I laugh, because I featured Ava DuVernay back in 2010, who's now, you know, first Black woman to direct a $100 million film with A Wrinkle in Time. She did 13. She did Selma.
Right.
I met her after her first documentary and was like, she's going to be big. Who else? Ryan Coogler. He directed Creed, and he's doing Black Panther now. He was the person I featured in college to watch.
Okay.
It's a few people now who are popping up, you know, who I had an eye for. But when I came out of FAM, I eventually decided to come back to New York after working in Detroit. And I was working for American Legacy magazine. The publisher is Rodney Reynolds. And at the time, my editor was Audrey Peterson. They were the ones who allowed me to see the functionality of a business. So while I went to school for journalism thinking I was going to come out and be this writer, you know, everybody wants to go to Essence. Shout out to Essence. Sharia is over at Essence. But that wasn't quite how it went. You know, I was like, oh, so when you're a magazine writer, you have to pitch a story. Okay. And that's how you get paid? I don't know about that. I worked at the Detroit News as a copy editor, which is, I love copy editing. But I'm also a person who likes to move around. So sitting at a desk for long periods of time, that's like the one side of my brain working that's very methodical and very tightly wound, you know, grammar and facts and logic and editing. Like, I'm really, really good at that, but after a while I get exhausted mentally. So I was doing that, working kind of crazy hours, and, you know, started working at the magazine and started teaching. And when I was teaching and working at the magazine, I would do one, like, 3 days a week, 2 days a week, and then I would switch off back and forth. And people kept telling me I had to decide which one I wanted to do. And I was like, but I don't want to. And, you know, if you can tell already by chatting with me, I do things, I do it the way I want to do it. I do it my way.
Right.
So I was doing both, and I started doing a lot of writing on the side for people. Because at the magazine, I really wasn't doing much writing. I was doing more production. So, you know, I was writing bios, I was writing resumes, I was writing content for people's websites and newsletters. And somebody asked me to write them a business plan. So I was like, okay, I can do that. You know, anything I don't know how to do, I teach myself how to do. And I went into trying to write this business plan and realized when I got to the numbers and the marketing, I was like, I don't really know what to do with that. I don't. So I had to make a decision. I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to go back to school. There's only so much I can teach myself.
Right.
Before I feel like I need an expert to step in and show me how to do it. So I was either going to go back for education or I was going to go back for business. And I decided on business because I was like, business will give me the fundamentals for so many other things I want to do. And the way I saw education shifting, I was like, I don't know if I want to be in a classroom that, like, I can't. That's too much for me. I love teaching kids, but I also like to do it my way.
Yes.
If I see it being done a certain way that I'm not, I don't want to say that I'm not cool with, because a lot of these teachers are in there and they're learning as they go. But just the system, you know, I'm not a person who necessarily works well within a system. And especially if I'm working under someone or for someone who I feel like I know more than, I'm not with that. I see it every day. I see it every day. I see it in corporate. I see it in education. I can't.
Yes.
You know, I love to learn from people. You know, at the magazine, that was definitely a learning experience where I got to sit back and just watch and learn. But, you know, just being forced to, you know, in New York City and probably other places, you know, you get your tenure and then you got to work a few more years and a few more years. I can't be locked in like that. I can't. So I went with business. And the first, my thesis was my magazine. Came out, you know, ran my magazine for a couple more years, and the first job I got was teaching business to high school students. So that motivated me to continue teaching business, because entrepreneurship for me is probably my favorite thing to teach to middle school and high school students, because I work in very tough areas where I feel like entrepreneurship is a plethora of skills in math, basic math, skills, social skills, life skills, decision making, art. You don't know how to add? Okay, you're going to do our advertising, marketing. I think once you work with kids in business, they can learn so many different fundamentals out of that. Even now, I was working with a group of boys. They were the challenging ones in the school, and they loved coming to my program. But every time they would try to sell stuff, people would be like, nah, because you didn't even come to my class. Or didn't you throw a chair the other day? So I would have to pull them aside and say, do you see how your reputation can mess with your money? Something that simple.
Right.
You know? So I think, you know, particularly kids in the hood really love business programs.
They do.
So that, you know, that's how my company started. It was really a magazine, and I also had the business, you know, education thing that I said one day I'm going to make that work. And when I finally put the magazine project down and started subcontracting for a lot of different arts companies and education companies in New York, I went in to teach somewhere, and a woman in the school asked me how much I was getting paid. And I looked at her like she was crazy, like, why are you asking me that? It's funny, I saw her like 2 days ago because she moved to Florida. And I said, why are you asking me that? And she says, well, you know how much we're paying that company. And she told me. And I said, I'm being pimped.
Yeah.
Like, oh, snap. So she explained to me how to go about getting my business information in order to be able to teach programs on my own and not have to go through other people. So it took a minute. You know, it happened in a roundabout kind of way where somebody I didn't even know put the paperwork through for me because they were so impressed with how I worked with their students. It was a principal. And since then, you know, it's kind of a word-of-mouth thing. People hear about me. People meet me. Somebody says they had a workshop with me, and they pass the information on. Ever since then, that's what I've been doing. I still do subcontracts with other companies because, you know, sometimes they have an opportunity that may last a little bit longer. And I'm like, you know what, I think I want to do something that's going to be about 3 or 4 months, you know, versus my work that might be a little bit shorter. But I love being able to work through my own company because I get to do it the way that makes the most sense to me as far as what that population needs. And I've also put on a bunch of my friends. And whenever I get an opportunity, I'm like, boom. You know, I start sending out text messages. I got this spot on Saturday. Does anybody want to come through? What do you want to do? You want to do yoga? You want to do dance? You want to do drama? You want to do computer skills? You want to do sister program? So just being able to run my own company gives me the opportunity to help other people, which for me is huge. You know, it ain't nothing if you ain't bringing everybody with you.
Right. Right. Yep.
So.
But
yeah, in a nutshell, is why I decided to start my company. I didn't
want
to keep making so much money for other people.
That's smart.
And I saw a different way to do it. You know, I never take stuff from anybody that I've worked for. But I'll also say a few times I've given suggestions to companies that I contracted with. And like, oh, okay, we know. Sometimes in the educational setting, you have people who feel like they know the kids, but if this is your neighborhood, you know that you know them better.
Right.
So for me, like, do I keep trying to get other people to follow my ideas, or do I simply take them and own them and stop trying to share my intellectual property with everybody? So that's another reason that I fell into business, because I decided I wanted to keep my ideas as my own. Not to mention, maybe other people didn't even see the value in what I was trying to share with them that I thought might be more effective. So,
gotta do what you gotta do.
That's what you do.
Yes, man. There's nothing wrong. I mean, that makes sense, though. And, you know, because I've reached that point in my life, and that's why I am. And, you know, I'm on my path as well, because why keep making other people rich when you, like you said earlier, when you know you know more than the people who are supervising you, and you, and they need you. Why keep putting yourself in the position to be pimped when you can make more money putting yourself in the position by doing things we love? But see, that's why we like interviewing people like you, because the passion in what you do just is eking out of you, and that's a great thing. Because it's a great message for people who are listening though, because follow your dreams, follow your heart, develop your talents, find what makes you happy, develop it, and do it for yourself and enrich your life and the people around you.
Yeah, the money will come. You know, that's right. The one thing I always say. Like, I was not always in a position where I was making that much, you know, and I still knew what I was going to do. You know, at some point you sit down, you start figuring out, how do I make this work? And if you got to do a little extra, you do a little extra. I got my first retail job in adulthood, working a night shift to make sure my daughter was in her private school. I did what I had to do. But, you know, nighttime I was doing that, daytime I was doing my passion.
There you go.
So sometimes, you know, people say sacrifice. I don't feel like I was sacrificing anything. I was doing something else to get me closer to what I wanted. There's no sacrifice, because I'm going to get what I want later.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I don't have it right now doesn't mean that it's not for me. It's not for me right now. So I didn't give it up. You know, I went for what was most important. I prioritized.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I was waiting for Joe to try to make it about him again, even though this is really about me and Kristen. It don't have nothing to do with you, Joe.
Hey, man. Look here, Patrick. I'm gonna make this mix CD. I'm gonna make this disc tape. Like Remy Ma did Nicki Minaj.
Hey,
I'm gonna get Patrick.
Shout out to the VX.
You know, I'm gonna get Patrick. Gonna be Nicki.
Don't
get him. Right.
First off,
no coming back.
Joseph Ward. your full government.
Yeah, I see.
Anyways, this is about me and Kristen. So my next question is, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, my brother. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, my brother. So, like, I'm somebody, right? And I'm listening to the interview, and I'm like, oh, man, that's dope. She sounds awesome. Great. Spectacular. What is it that she does again?
So, okay.
Can you break it down?
I used to say, oh, it's so hard to explain, but it's not. I tell people that I inspire, I educate, and I empower learners of all ages. So in a nutshell, that's what I do. Now, specifically, what do I do? It depends on what day of the week, and it depends on the age that I'm working with. At one time, I worked with pregnant teen moms on helping them learn about things that they should look for once their babies were born and how they should be developing, early stages, I guess you could say. So that was pregnant moms all the way up to people who had three-year-olds. Kindergarten, early elementary, I work with them on literacy through the arts. So I'm often going in and teaching programs where we're learning about verbs and we're learning about nouns and we're learning about blends, but how are we learning about it? Well, we're reading a book, usually a cultural one, because I do feel like that makes a difference. We're sketching the book out on paper. You know, we're drawing a picture and then we're writing that word and then we're sounding the word out. And then we're doing that movement to the picture that we see. And then, you know, we're sequencing the order of the story. So literacy, in a nutshell. Junior high and high school, I work very heavily in entrepreneurship and career readiness. I'm pretty heavy on college. I have a good friend, Daytuan, who's like a master of college. I'm heavier in career because I do that with adults, where I do a lot of training in interviewing skills, how to put your resume together, how to write a cover letter, etiquette. Networking. Entrepreneurship, I kind of talked to you guys through that before. When I work with the kids and they get, you know, money up front and then they have to flip that money and they keep flipping it and flipping it and flipping it. I had a junior high school, a group of girls in the South Bronx 3 years ago who started the year with $60 and flipped it into $1,650. For the end of the year, they got a Lincoln. They got a nice little limo stretch. We went up to Westchester. We ate at Sweet Potatoes. The owner there, you know, gave them a whole area. And then we went to, like, an arcade center. So my kids make money. I don't just be talking. I be teaching them how to make money. And then adults. I teach a lot of parent workshops, how to work with special needs children, how to do literacy with your kids at home. I teach basic computer skills to parents who are usually non-English speakers. How do you set up your email address? How do you search for a job? How do you create a resume? How do you make a PowerPoint? I also teach GED programs or pre-GED programs where I help parents strengthen their literacy and math skills before they actually go in to take the GED or before they go to take the GED class, because a lot of times it's really confidence that they lack. And finally, you know, this past year and change, I've, you know, not switch directions, but add it on to the repertoire. I've been coaching teachers, and I absolutely love it. I coach them in behavior management, and I coach them in lesson planning, because sometimes bringing a classroom alive will get your students back. Sometimes the language that you use with students who are from a certain population totally matters. And if nobody ever told you that, you know, the way it works with teachers in New York City and a lot of places, you know, you go in, you get this feedback form after somebody came in and took a snapshot of your lesson, and, you know, they tell you this is what you need to work on, and they come back later, a few months later, and say, okay, you didn't do that. What I get to do is work with the teacher every week or a couple of times a week where we're working on those specific things you need to work on, so the next time it comes back around, you've improved. You know, you're not just left out there in the cold to figure it out. So I like that because it's working with kids in our community. And often, you know, teachers have good intentions, but they get burnt out. You know, they get stressed out by administrations. They get stressed out by kids. They get stressed out by life. And a large part of me working with adults is getting them to take care of themselves. you know, if you don't have it all together personally, then you're not going to have anything for these kids. So the first thing I need you to do is check in with yourself. And when you come at people with that level of understanding that lets them know that you're there to support them, you want to see them succeed and you want to see the kids succeed, and there you're not allowed to fail because these kids are dependent on you. So that's where we're starting. It's very empowering to be able to empower them to go in and teach our kids. So
that's
what I do. Oh, and I teach dance. Zumba classes and ballet and African and hip-hop. So that's like the creative fun side, musicals and things like that. So, you know, I could literally be doing any of these things on any given day of the week, which is why my life stays pretty exciting, and I like it that way.
You know, I teach, I don't teach hip-hop, but I do hip-hop dance, and sometimes late at night, 1-2 in the morning, I go in the bathroom and turn the lights out and turn the radio up real loud and pretend like I'm in the club, and I'll be smashing it. I kill it.
Can you record that for us? I would love to see that.
You know, I'll see what, you know what, my people will contact your people. Don't call us, we'll call you.
I got you.
We're going to put a hidden camera in there and get you. We're going to get you.
If you get a camera in my bathroom, you earned everything you see.
No.
Hey, we're gonna have some special people to go through the film, because I'm not going through it. Trust me, we're gonna get some special people. We're gonna get all the embarrassing moments we need. So,
I be smashing it, bro. I be killing it. I'm telling you,
yeah,
I'm about to come
man.
Up with a few new dances that I ain't never been come up with before.
Boy.
Hey, man, you inspire the world, my brother.
I should.
So, Kristen, I want to ask, because you work with the kids and you work with the parents. You know, I have as well, Patrick have as well. We all three of us have that in common, where we're able to work with kids and parents. And, you know, we all understand that when you work with kids, a reinforcement has to be there from the information that you've given them to kind of help that information stick and mold and things there. So how, and when we're talking about the entrepreneurship realm, so how can parents who are not entrepreneurs help their children gain the resources and information that need to become entrepreneurs, so those parents can help reinforce the information that they would get if they come from your class?
Well, I have taught really young kids about entrepreneurship because it can start off as very basic. Even if a parent can't tell their child how to do it, what they can do is show them support.
Mm-hmm.
And most people have phones. Most people have internet. If you don't, the library has it. You can pretty much Google anything you really want to figure out. but, you know, a few resources. There's an app that I have on my phone called World of Money. This young lady, what's her name? A young lady put me onto that app because it shows children of color, and they're learning about entrepreneurship, they're learning about money, they're learning about saving. So I would definitely forward people to that. There was another program that I worked with called Money Savvy Kids, and Tahira, that's her name. She works with this company. Money Savvy Kids was started by a woman named Susan Beecham, and she talked about the test back in the day that they did with kids where, you know, they sat kids down in a room and they said, you know, you could have one cookie right now, or you can wait 15 minutes and have two. And, you know, a couple of the kids waited. Most of them just ate their cookie. And the purpose of her explaining that was that most people are not wound to have delayed gratification. They have to be taught. You know, it doesn't make you a bad person if you didn't wait the 15 minutes. It just means that long term, certain people are wired that way and certain people are not. So those who are not, you got to teach it to them. So in her program, she taught kids how to save, spend, donate, and invest. And I use a lot of those principles in my classroom when I'm teaching entrepreneurship to young children, because them understanding what it means to save and have long term and short term goals. What's a short term goal? That might be like saving for a movie ticket. That might be, you know, saving for, we don't have CDs anymore, but, you know, I don't know what little kids save for now.
Whatever.
I don't know. My daughter's 12. But a long-term goal, like maybe you want to save for a laptop. Maybe you want to save for college, you know. High school student might be saving up for a car. So you can find lots of different resources online to just show kids the fundamentals of saving. There's one thing, there's a, this young lady, she has something called Communitry. Her name is Dominique, and she's a black woman who empowers the community in financial literacy. And right now she has a savings club where you put in like $1 week one and $2 week two and $3 week three. So by the end of the year, you have like $2,000-something saved up. So there are people everywhere with resources on how to save. There are also banks that have resources for parents to be able to teach their children about saving. But the most important thing, I will say, I'll go right back to my mama and my auntie. They were extremely responsible with their money. So mm-hmm. watching how they moved, they were an example for me. It took me a minute to catch up because I'm not the person who would have waited for a cookie back then. But they led by example. My aunt was buying AT&T stocks way back in the 80s, and now she's good because
right.
she's responsible. She invested in her stocks. You know, that's one part of the program. On time. So those were things that I got to grow up watching. And when I did get older, I knew some of those fundamentals. I didn't do them to the best of my ability all the time, but I definitely knew exactly who to watch, you know, as an example of how to do those things. So being an entrepreneur, when I do that program with the little kids, we talk about what are ways that kids can make money. You know, I don't know if y'all heard about Farrah Gray. He was like a millionaire by the time he was like
yeah.
a teenager.
Yeah, he did the tree in that book. Yeah.
Dude was selling rocks.
Yeah.
So for one, be creative. Be creative, be confident, figure out what a decent price point is. I'm always talking about unit pricing when I'm working with junior high school students. And think of something that you're amazingly good at. You know, it's a bunch of little girls around here making hair care products and things like that and doing little web videos. Do something that you're passionate about. You know what? Walk a dog. No, gentlemen. Go outside and shovel. There are ways you can make money if you really want to, you know, even if you're a kid. You just got to be motivated to do it.
You know, I try to get people to understand, especially people with kids and kids themselves, the best time for a person to be successful in business is when they're a child because they have that cuteness factor. You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? People buy from a kid just because it's a kid. They don't want your product. They don't need it. They don't like it. But you're cute,
true.
So I'm going to buy it. You know what I'm saying?
That's
and
true.
I think
mm-hmm.
that's something that's heavily underestimated by parents. You know what I'm saying? And by even other kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, I see this. There's a kid around here. He was on the news not too long ago here in Charlotte. He's selling, like, paper mache action figures.
Hmm.
Like, and not like paper mache like you think, like notebook paper made into action figures.
Wow.
And it looks like a little kid made it. It looks like it. It looks just as horrible as it sounds. But
but I bet you.
He's making money off it.
Yeah.
Because he's 8 years old, and people want to, oh, he's so cute, I want to buy the little $5 piece of folded notebook paper and blah, blah,
hey.
Blah. And it, yes. I'm trying to tell you, man.
Hey, you got to
mm-hmm.
be creative and get out there and do what you got to do. So.
Do it.
Hey.
I wish I was 6 years old.
The advantages of being a child and being an entrepreneur. So, I do want to ask this question as well. As an educator, in your opinion, why is it important for especially black kids and to learn about their cultural backgrounds?
Ooh-wee.
And you know, and what in your opinion, what type of impact does that information have on our children? How does that help?
An amazing impact.
Okay.
I'm so glad you asked that. So, you know, I keep saying these organizations because I definitely didn't get to where I am without building upon others who lifted me here. My mentor, Lillian Reynolds, brought Freedom School to Mount Vernon, New York. Have you guys ever heard of Freedom School?
No.
It started
nope.
back in, like, the 1960s. It was when college students were going into low-income areas and you know, teaching kids during the summertime to help them work through that whole summer reading gap. So Freedom Schools are all over the United States now, and they train at the Alex Haley Farm in Tennessee every year. And when Ms. Reynolds brought it to Mount Vernon, she had us all go down to the Alex Haley Farm and train. And when I tell you, it was like Turn Up City. We were doing raps, and we were doing all these things. Read a book, read a book. I mean, the kids, like, you just pump the kids up. Like, every morning they come in, and they sing this song, Something Inside So Strong. You know, so first, the motivation of hearing something that is great for you being said to you in a way that you understand, that's what gets them going early in the morning. Now we're going to talk about cultural literacy. Freedom School only uses cultural books. So the kids in the books are all kids of color. Yes, white people in some of the books too. So no, nobody's left out. But it's definitely where they're looking at reflections of themselves when they're reading. At the end of the 6 weeks of Freedom School every summer, these kids, the majority are two reading levels ahead when they come out. So studies have been done to show that when these kids are learning and looking at images of themselves, reinforcing it, very similar to the arts program I do where, you know, they might read a book. You know, they're going to pull out images and do an art piece on the book. Then they're going to do a play on the book. You know, then there's like dear time, drop everything and read time, where it's cool to read and even your teacher is reading at a certain time. That kind of reinforcement actually does make a difference in literacy. It's been proven. Now, why people don't get it or don't implement this, that's beyond me. I don't understand the powers that be all the time, but it is so important for kids to see positive images of themselves. Imaging is everything. Everything. You know, you can do it at home. I definitely had it at home. My auntie made sure we had all the black dolls. I have Mufaro's Beautiful Daughters and Why Do Mosquitoes Buzz in People's Ears? My aunt was an educator, and she's a huge part or a huge reason why I took the road that I did, my aunt and my grandma. And I was surrounded by books of people who looked like me. And what that did was boost my confidence in who I was as a person. Anybody who thinks it doesn't matter must have their head somewhere in a hole. So the cultural awareness is everything. And one of the other things Freedom School did, outside of just talking about culture, they had a theme every week, and they would do the self, family, community, country, and world. So there was always a reflection of social awareness. Who am I? Who's my family? What matters to me? What makes me important as a person? Who am I to my family? Am I helpful to my parents? What's my family makeup? How are the people in my family important to me? Then we go to the community. Like, what can I do to reach out to my fellow brothers and sisters who live on my block? Can I keep my block clean? You know, who's the librarian where I go? My country, you know, just knowing about people who may not live the way you live. And, you know, there are people around America who are homeless. Like, just different community projects and ways that they could reach out to people who are all over the United States. And finally, world. Like, we are a part of this one huge mass in the universe. And we are connected. Energy-wise, we're connected, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. Not just because of your color, not just because of the country you happen to be born in. We are literally connected through energy. So, you know, we run this thing. We could either run it really, really well so it keeps giving to us, or we could destroy it and destroy each other at the same time. So that, to me, is culture, too. Culture isn't always just ethnicity. It's the culture of who you are and how you connect with others. So when kids learn by looking at people who are like them, who have accomplished amazing things, when they learn a certain level of emotional awareness and social awareness and how they connect with other people, they get to be amazing, outstanding citizens of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They grow up to not just be about themselves. They grow up to pay attention to the things that are going on around them and not live in a bubble. So, you know, cultural awareness is a very broad thing that I feel is extremely important in educating kids.
Yes, yes, yes. Definitely agree with you. Don't you, Pat?
Oh yeah, you know, I'm a culturalist, man.
You better be listening.
You know, I'm a culturalist, man. I'm through and through. You know, we talk about this all the time. I think culture is the most important thing in the world. You know, and I view, because for me, culture is the way you interpret the world and your place in it. You know, your how you view yourself in it and how you view the world itself. And it's immensely, matter of fact, and I agree with her when she says she don't know, well, I got some theories, but, you know, we can keep it whatever. But, you know, Harvard and the University of Harvard and the University of Pittsburgh, I think it was, a few years back, did a joint study that found that when children have a sense of cultural pride instilled in them, they do better academically and they tend to be more fulfilled throughout the course of their life.
Yeah.
Yep. So I don't understand why everybody is all against, but Joe, this ain't about us, bro. This is about her.
I keep trying to tell you. I keep trying to tell you, but you keep, you know.
Nah, because you the one talking about when I went to fam. I didn't go to fam, first off, so don't even.
Well, that's your fault.
No, it's not my fault. That's fam's fault. They didn't know what they was missing.
Hey.
Whatever. Okay. This is. Hey, you ain't talking about no Ohio State or nothing like that. Okay. So.
Oh yeah, but you right. Ohio State was smart enough to recruit your boy. I ain't go there either.
Hey. Don't you talk bad. But I see. That's two diss albums. That's two diss records. Right.
Well, bring it, Nikki. You got Drake and Lil Wayne on your little records too. They still gonna be trash.
Man, ask your question before I put a third record on you.
Is it time for the question? I need a drum roll.
See, hold on. You're going too fast, okay?
No, you're going too slow.
Southerners
is a
oh, boy.
See, look at him. Are you ready for your question, Pat? Is you ready? Is you? We set it up like this, Kristen. We got it started like this. So.
Oh, coming.
So, if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, the queen, the pharaoh, march czar of Black people in America, what would you change and what would your message to the people be?
What would I change? Ooh, boy. I would very likely do a wipe, a mental wipe. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? Thinking of, what's that
Master
movie?
Plan.
There's this movie, kind of like The Hunger Games. Came out after the Hunger Games, and they were going to, like, wipe everybody's mental. I wouldn't do it to everyone, but I think what continues to hold us back is, number one, many of us have forgotten. We need to remember. There are other people who have lived in a space for so long that they can't acknowledge the things that went wrong here. And so, if there would be some acknowledgement to be able to move to another place, I think we could do that. But for those who fail to acknowledge so that we can move on, perhaps if they were wiped of their memory, then they could just move off of what was in front of them and not what they had been taught. Because a large part of racism is taught, and it keeps getting genetically mutated through each generation. So I think if we could start clean, with no, judgment and, I would only be queen of America. I think it's a global thing. The way that we treat people of color, we need a reset. But I also feel like we're strong people. So I think if everybody would know who they are and know their history and protect their coins, that would shift many, many, many things here in America. That's what I would do if I was queen. everybody would have an immediate awareness of how powerful they were, how powerful their dollar was, how powerful their culture was, how powerful their minds are outside of just their physical bodies that play sports and such. I think we'd be doing huge things if we all woke up. So I snapped my fingers, and we woke.
I don't blame you. Yeah. See, we love to ask that question. That's our one consistent question, because we like to record the answers and see what different people say about that answer and just the different ideas and things that they would bring to the table about improving Black America. Now, before we start to wrap this up, where can people find you? I'm online or whatever. How can people get in contact with you?
So my company is Mini Endeavors. If anybody wanted to reach out to me, miniendeavors@gmail.com. I had a website at one time. I'll eventually have one up because I'm working on a new travel project where I'm going to be bringing parents and children on travel trips. That's my next big thing. But if somebody contacts me directly, it's very easy for me to respond. KristenWright@gmail.com. That's another place you could hit me. I'm on Facebook, Kristen Wright, CRYSTYN, Wright, WRIGHT. And, you know, if you Google me, a lot of the different organizations I work with will pop up as well. So.
Okay.
There are a bunch of ways to get in contact with me. And, you know, once somebody contacts me, I send them my materials. Eventually I will have, you know, a website type of situation. I know it's very necessary. However, you know, I talked a little bit earlier about my intellectual property. So I'm careful about how much of what I do I send out to people. I would prefer that they actually talk to me and have a conversation with me if they are interested in my materials and what it is that I'm doing. So.
Okay.
And are you single?
That's a funny question.
He just come out of nowhere with that.
I enjoy
long walks on the beach.
I'm very loved. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I'm loved, and I have friends in different time zones.
There you go.
I'm loved.
There you go.
And different.
That's what it is. I constantly feel lots of love. I'm so
there you go.
Area code.
Nothing wrong with it.
Time.
You crazy, man.
And different area code.
No,
because
see,
people be, you know, we'll have women on the show, and they'll
and
be
some dude, some random
intriguing
dude.
And you know, ravishing and all these other kind words. The dudes would be like, yo, is she single?
So you want to go ahead and get it out there in the atmosphere now?
Right.
I got you.
Be like, look, just listen to the show, and when we get to the end, she states whether or not she's single, and then whether or not she'll be interested to the advances of you.
Listen, I'm loved, and I'm always open to inviting any people in my life who come for good, who want to come and add on to whatever it is that I'm doing.
So there you go.
Then you got to catch me. Catch me if you can.
There you go. Random guy number 278.
I ain't slowing down, you know.
There you go.
So.
That's why she got him in area codes.
Look at you.
Listen, I'll be
thank
in
you.
Africa this summer.
Oh, that's good.
In Africa, everywhere. So anybody
that's
who
good.
Wants to meet me out there, I invite you to come and hang with me. It's going to be, you know, Kristen Travels Africa. So we'll see how that works out. You want to find me, that's where you can catch me.
There you go. Take your trip to Africa and get your life right. But you got to have, make sure your mentality is together. Make sure your mind has been swept of all the bull before you step to her. Okay?
Thank you, because I ain't here for it. My life is too happy, and I'm too happy. So.
Right. Right. Well, we definitely thank you for coming along and riding on the Freedom Train with us and blessing us with your enthusiasm, your passion, your love, your information. What you bring to the community is definitely an asset. Shout out to Keith Turner for connecting us. So,
can I sprinkle one more thing on you?
Go ahead.
You know, one of the things we didn't mention was self-care.
Okay.
And, you know, as I just told you, I got on this call with you right after leaving the spa. Sometimes when you pour everything into the people around you, sometimes you forget to pour into yourself. So I think one of the most important things in being able to empower your community is being able to empower yourself, being able to take care of yourself, make sure that your mental is good, you know, learn to, you know, distance yourself from certain energies. And sometimes you got to step into those energies because people, everybody needs a little help. But
right.
also learning to protect your energy and to set your boundaries, because that's the way that you love yourself best.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat.
Ah, you don't know nothing about that.
Stop. Do the dance, Pat. Do the dance.
I'm doing it.
I'm that dance.
Yeah, you got to stretch before you do that dance, because you're gonna hurt yourself. we're not gonna hold you up any longer though. But thank you, thanks, and we definitely look forward to having you back on here in the future. Definitely.
Oh, I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, ma'am.
I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right.
Yes, ma'am. Pat.
What
you
up?
Crazy. You crazy.
Hey, man,
I just want to say my mixtape 21 Chess Hairs is coming out next week. So
21
sure
Chess Hairs. And what's special about the number 21?
I got 21 chess hairs.
Okay, and what's special about the chess body part?
I just want people to know that I got 21 chess hairs now. So
okay,
my new mixtape.
Ain't no secret code. You know.
Well, you got to listen to the mixtape to get that. So
oh,
you trying to give it all away. Now you got to listen to the mixtape to get that.
Okay.
You feel me?
I feel you.
Shoot. Hey, y'all, make sure y'all visit www.paxinc.org to learn more about PAX Inc. and also to internalize the codes of conduct that have been created. Make sure you visit www.ontheshouldersone.com to learn more about different figures who I display on my website throughout the African diaspora, and to get your copy of my book On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 1, North America. Oh yeah, and while you're on the PAX Inc., make sure you get your copy of our PAX Inc. calendar/codes of conduct that features the codes of conduct and African history information for your everyday and monthly learning. Make sure y'all visit www.wauwhataboutus.com so you can learn how to support the Independence Day Project and many endeavors. Kristen Wright, many endeavors. Make sure you contact her. I should say, contact on Facebook, KristenWright@gmail.com. Make sure you contact her through the email or Facebook anyway. Support the people who are out here helping to make our community better. Start supporting Versace. Start supporting Gucci, Chick-fil-A, all these people who don't like us. Support the people who work for us. She just dropped off a whole truckload of jewels to just bust you in the head with. So, you know. Let's do what we got to do to make sure we're supporting our community, uplifting ourselves. And you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, Pat? You know what I'm saying? With that being said, we're going to tell y'all like this. Never, never trust a groundhog who wears Michael Jordan shoes. See you next time. Peace.